This confluence of Fed hikes and investor naivety, quote, presents the setup for a severe washout, as the, quote, pernicious effects of rising interest rates on future cash flows will likely prompt speculators and investors at the margin to dump or severely reduce their crypto holdings. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to the show. This is Bitcoin Audible, and I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. So I'm doing something a little different today just because I want to talk about how Bitcoin moves and why trading is a terrible idea. anybody who listens to this show know, I almost never talk about the price because I think it's frivolous. I think it loses relevance almost immediately. So if anybody comes back to this episode or an episode where we talk about the price, it's going to feel outdated instantly. And it's also the essence of high time preference in Bitcoin discussion. So that is why we stick to the fundamentals, the philosophy, how it works, long-term development, all of that good stuff, the stuff that's meaningful. However, today... I actually think this is going to lead us into a discussion that I think is all of those things. But it is actually in the context of what's happening with Bitcoin's price and how does it move and why. So I'm reading a bit of an Inception article today. This is actually Nick Bhatia's article on his Substack, but it summarizes and adds thoughts to Arthur Hayes's article titled Maelstrom. And I have read both, and I'm going to give my take on Bhatia's take on Arthur Hayes' article. But not really. I just wanted to talk about the price of Bitcoin, how I think about it, how to prepare for the unexpected in these markets. And this article is just kind of what got me thinking about it. So this is what I'm reading. I also thought about reading Arthur's actual article, but there was enough of the body of it that was kind of shitcoiny. And I was just like, after I got like halfway through, I was like, I don't know. And Nick's summary does it justice anyway. There's no reason to, you know, read a 30-minute article when 11-minute does the job. But if Bitcoin dropped to $30,000 in a day or two, would you be ready? Are you leveraged? Are you expecting it to move some particular way and trading on that? Because hopefully, I'm going to scare you out of that and back into stacking sats like a sane person. Before we get into that, I just want to thank our amazing sponsors. First, the Stop Trading and Stack Automatically service, Swan Bitcoin. SwanBitcoin.com/guy is the magic sauce for supporting this show and supporting your future stress-free. Then, Bitcoin 2022, the conference of Bitcoiners that cannot be matched. Miami, early April, prices rise, I think, next week. So get your tickets now. 10% off in the show notes. And then the Fold card for stacking sats on everything in life. It is a debit card and you stack sats on all things. I actually got 6% back this morning on my Starbucks delivery. They have a new wheel. You got to check it out. I was pretty stoked about that. What to do with all of those sats after you have stacked them? You're going to keep them safe and secure on your BitBox hardware wallet. You know it's yours when it's on your BitBox. These guys keep this show alive, and they keep me doing what I love. So thank them. Check them out. Discounts and all goodies in the show notes. With that, let's go ahead and jump into today's read and guys' take to follow. And it is titled, Arthur Hayes. Bitcoin could be heading below $30,000 on capitulation, by Nick Bhatia. A summary and analysis of last night's bearish warning. Summary. Maelstrom, the article's title, means a powerful, often violent whirlpool sucking in objects within a given radius. On March 16, 2020, Bitcoin's price reached $4,000 in a massive capitulation and correlation one moment, in which all global risk assets collapsed in unison as the reality of a global pandemic took hold. Hayes believes that we are heading into a, quote, string of trading days as disastrous as the 16th of March in 2020. As a result of the Fed reducing the growth of their balance sheet to 0% and subsequently raising rates 1 to 3 times in 2022. Inflation is becoming a political problem, and the Fed is cornered into tightening monetary policy, or what he calls engaging in the kabuki theater of raising interest rates. He believes this will inflict max pain on global risk assets, but eventually results in central banks easing policy once again. He dropped a stinger about crypto's eternal optimists that are blind to macro forces. Quote, "My read on the sentiment of crypto investors is that they naively believe network and user growth fundamentals of the entire complex will allow crypto assets to continue their upward trajectory unabated. This confluence of Fed hikes and investor naivety, quote, presents the setup for a severe washout, as the, quote, pernicious effects of rising interest rates on future cash flows will likely prompt speculators and investors at the margin to dump or severely reduce their crypto holdings." Hayes identifies a lagged correlation between the money supply, M2 growth rate, and Bitcoin, and claims that Bitcoin's sideways price has corresponded with a stall in Fed balance sheet growth. With the Fed's QE program coming to an end, an asset portfolio maturing and possibly shrinking, Bitcoin's price should follow lower. He would dump all shitcoins because, quote, "Bitcoin and Ether are the highest quality coins," and, quote, "shitcoins could go down 75% to 90% due to their illiquidity." Bitcoin and Ethereum are being used as collateral to borrow dollars to finance other purchases, financial or otherwise. This could cause forced liquidations. He believes that an opaque part of the money market will break, and the Fed will restore order in quick fashion. Quote, "The government will then get back to the business of pumping financial asset prices with printed money. It's the business model of America, and one that must be maintained due to the structure of the global economy." Hayes is long duration, meaning he's betting on a fall in interest rates, and presumably long the dollar via exposure through options, representing a long volatility position to, quote, "make up for any losses on the crypto side of the book." He admits to not having enough exposure to this position. His portfolio, after reaching these macro conclusions, quote, "I went through my entire crypto portfolio. After a 75% drop from the current levels, any shitcoin I wouldn't increase my position in, I dumped. That left me with Bitcoin, Ether, and a few other large positions in Metaverse and algorithmic stablecoin-related tokens. At below $20,000 per Bitcoin or $1,400 per Ether, he worries about the long-term viability of each asset. Quote, "I stand ready for the capitulation candle. It's impossible to catch the very bottom, but once you spot the capitulation, add with confidence." Analysis. Hayes is a popular character in the Bitcoin saga, and a noteworthy read when he rarely puts pen to pad. I generally agreed with his premises, but wanted to add some nuance to it. Hayes conveyed some of the key themes that we've covered in this publication over the past few months. First, the Fed is starting a tightening cycle due to rampant and no longer transitory headline inflation. Whatever the cause, long-term effects of monetary stimulus, short-term effects of supply chain disruption, or both, the Fed must respond by raising rates. This will eventually break risk markets, and the Fed's unofficial mandate, stock prices, will cause it to stop tightening and go back to its money printing ways. Bitcoin will be caught in the crossfire on the way down and back up. This is a must-read post from November in which I covered and reviewed all of these topics, including help with interest rate terminology, and concluded that Bitcoin still trades as a risk asset. Readers would have been prepared for Bitcoin's price weakness if they had spotted the bearish divergence on Bitcoin's price chart I flagged in my year-end chart pack. Now that you're caught up, you can see why I wanted to flag Arthur Hayes's latest post. He's warning against a large flush in Bitcoin's price in correlation with other risk assets, primarily driven by Fed hikes, which are driven by inflation. The thesis is sound. The reaction function, in which the Fed eases policy because it's the lender of only resort, a concept covered extensively in Chapter 6 of Preston Pish's number one read of 2021, Layered Money, is also a concept I strongly believe in. Let's go deeper into some of the nuance to what Hayes is saying. There is misplaced optimism in crypto, and a refusal to see that Bitcoin is driven by a macro flow, not just network growth. This is one of the most important points made in Hayes' essay. Bitcoin no longer exists in a bubble with its own fundamentals. Bitcoin evangelists have been too successful over the past several years in spreading the gospel of decentralized money, that Bitcoin has become just another mainstream market. Bitcoin still has its own fundamentals and long-term value drivers, but the traditional markets have quite the grip on Bitcoin's price recently. Bitcoin, for most of the past several months, has traded off Fed news, yield curve flattening, pandemic headlines, and much of the same news flow driving stock prices. Bitcoin is maturing. Rising interest rates affect valuations. It's just math. Hayes talks about the pernicious effect of rising rates, but the dangers are strictly arithmetical in nature. When interest rates go up, higher discount rates reduce valuations. This is finance 101. From a mathematical standpoint, future cash flows, the numerator, are discounted to the present, and a higher discount rate, the denominator, results in a lower present value. This simple math formula ripples throughout every asset class, Bitcoin not excluded, when the Fed tightens monetary policy. Higher discount rates are a force too strong to fight, and why a Fed that wants to raise interest rates multiple times in 2022 will face a jittery stock market, as Excel spreadsheets across Wall Street recalculate equity valuations with higher discount rates as the input. The Fed, beholden to stock prices, will be tested on how far it is willing to tighten policy. The last time the Fed tried this, starting in 2015, it was able to raise interest rates over 200 basis points before breaking the risk market. I slightly disagree with Hayes here. I don't think the Fed will be forced to reverse course in the next 6 months. That seems too quick. Headline inflation will be a key metric to watch, as well as the S&P 500's performance. If money printing is the reason investors buy Bitcoin, a contracting Fed balance sheet could have the reverse effect. With Hayes pointing out the relationship between M2 growth rate and Bitcoin's price, we can see that a more disciplined Fed should drive investors away from the Bitcoin thesis, as the following meme loses relevance when an end to QE and a reduction on the Fed's asset portfolio. Money printer go burr. He's hedged his crypto portfolio with a long duration and long dollar trade. Hayes is exposed to a long duration, long dollar, and long volatility trade. This means he will make money when interest rates fall, the dollar increases relative to a basket of currencies, and volatility, presumably FX and equity, rises. He has this trade to hedge crypto exposure, expecting his hedge to increase in value when Bitcoin prices fall. This would confirm Bitcoin as a risk asset, at least in the current market regime. I found it very interesting to see him discuss the relationship between his crypto exposure and macro hedges. The reason to be in the Bitcoin trade in the first place is this whole Fed dance. The dollar is a broken system, and the Fed is forced to create trillions of dollars when anything even slightly breaks. When a lapse in this money printing occurs, as is about to happen right now, it is reasonable to expect the Bitcoin market to react accordingly. This is the main point of Arthur Hayes. Bitcoin will fall victim to Fed tightening, but it should resume its trend as soon as the Fed reverses course. The crises in dollar liquidity markets are frequenting our shores at an increasing rate, and the Fed's responses are only becoming more fierce and grandiose. Those future responses still warrant the long Bitcoin position. All right, so let's go ahead and hit our sponsor for today, and then we will jump back in. And I want to talk about the short term, what kind of market we have actually found ourselves in now, and what's driving a lot of this. And I want to make sure that the listeners of this show are not naive about expecting the price to do something, because in the long time that I have been in Bitcoin, if there is anything that I have learned, it's that Bitcoin takes the path of greatest pain. If you start expecting it to do something, it's going to punch you square in the face. So we're going to talk about that in just a second. Let's hit our sponsor and we will jump back in. Bitcoin 2022 is at the beginning of April. It is the 6th through the 9th, and it is going to be the craziest Bitcoin conference that ever was. There's literally going to be tens of thousands of Bitcoiners in Miami during this event. And there are going to be satellite events before, for the week before and the week after. It's going to be crazy. There are so many incredible speakers. Jack Mallers is going to be back. Bukele is going to be talking, the president of El Salvador. There's going to be a literal music festival. We got Seyfedin, we got Michael Saylor, we got Adam Back, we got Elizabeth Stark, we got Jeff Booth. I mean, the list goes on. This is the who's who of Bitcoin is going to be there, and you are going to want to be there too. And luckily, you guys get 10% off because you are listeners of the Bitcoin Audible podcast. You are the Audionauts, and code GUYSWANN, S-W-A-N-N, two N's in that name, gets you 10% off those tickets, and that includes tickets for any of it. So if you're looking for the industry pass, you want a general admission, or if you want the whale pass so you can hang out with the celebrities and everybody else who has egregious amounts of money, it's going to be incredible. And don't forget, tickets go up in price soon. I think it's next week, if I'm not mistaken. So get them now. Don't wait. Don't pay too much. Take the discount. Take the lower price. And I will see you guys. I am actually speaking to, and I'm going to try to hit up as many of you as possible. Don't forget to DM me, and I'll catch you in April at Bitcoin 2022. All right. So let's talk about this article and what I want to take away from this. So there's a handful of different things about how Bitcoin price is moving and where we are in kind of the stage of the Bitcoin market. So one thing to keep in mind, because I think Arthur Hayes is right, and Nick Bhatia brings this up in the summary, is that the quote-unquote crypto investors are very naively under the impression that essentially if the network grows, or if the number of users who come in continues to grow, that basically the only thing that can happen is the price goes up. And I don't even think, like, in the context of Bitcoin maximalists, or like the stackers and the people who just buy and hold and automatic stack with Swan or whatever, the people who are not leveraged, the people who are not trading, they're like the meat of the market, right? They're the base. But all the price action happens on the margin. It's with the crypto people, it's the traders, it's Wall Street, and now it's massive investors who are using Bitcoin as a risk asset. They are there because they are trading against the actions of the Fed. And remember, like when Bitcoin isn't kind of on a tear or deep in a bear market, like Bitcoin has its like general swings, but even for like the last 3 to 4 years, Bitcoin has correlated with the traditional markets pretty well outside of spans in which it takes its own trend. Like it sets a bull trend for some period or a bear trend for some period. But it definitely has these surface waves rather than ocean currents, you know, like think of that as the long-term buyers and the major network growth and the real use cases and the automatic stacks, all of this stuff. These are the ocean currents, right? These are the things that build gradually, but they're massive. But there's always surface waves. The traders are the surface waves. And now there's some pretty big surface waves because we are so attached. We are so, the Bitcoin market has become so mature that it is interconnected and becoming more correlated with the legacy markets. So what does that mean? What the hell is driving the legacy markets? Nothing. Nothing. The only thing driving the Fed, the only thing driving the legacy markets is the Federal Reserve. That is it. It is the influx of new money. And both Nick Bhatia and Arthur Hayes are basically talking about it in this context, is that because of how mature the market has become and how much of the legacy markets and major investors and institutions have now come to Bitcoin, they are now going to, Bitcoin is now going to respond far more deeply or far more in tune with what's going on essentially with the Fed. You can say it's with what's going on with the legacy markets, but the legacy markets is just a giant dispersal of new money. So the legacy markets just correlate with the Fed. The Fed minutes, when they give a talk or they say what the next interest rate is going to be, that is what's driving the legacy markets. If the Fed doesn't do the right thing, the legacy markets are essentially a handful of weeks, maybe a couple of months from utter collapse. There's no fundamentals that are actually holding that thing up. It is a clown show. It's the definition of a bubble. And the idea, the worry here, is that Bitcoin could have a huge capitulation candle if we have another event like March 16th, 2020. Now, for those of you who weren't here, there was a huge, essentially a credit crunch in the legacy markets, and all the risk assets got sold off because essentially people were getting liquidated or in a position where they were going to have to get liquidated. So anything that was liquid, any risk asset that was betting on a weaker dollar or inflation had to get sold off in the face of credit deflation that was happening. People were defaulting on loans, and when that happens, money actually disappears from the system, and people have to rush to actually shore up or pay off a debt that is now underwater. And what happens is the value of the dollar temporarily spikes. Now that Bitcoin is playing a large role as a risk asset in those markets, it is very much in, March of 2020 is really what showed us that this is where Bitcoin is, even though honestly, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, it probably still would have done the same thing. But regardless, I think it was probably a little bit more exaggerated maybe in the 2020 just because of where the market had grown to at that point. But Bitcoin is definitely trading more to a greater degree as a risk asset for institutional investors now. And that is a good thing. In a general sense, that's a great thing because we're looking at, you know, Bitcoin's becoming a teenager, right? But this is why you don't trade. Or at least in my opinion, in my advice, I say don't trade. Do not leverage yourself because you will get destroyed based on whether or not Jerome Powell wakes up in a bad mood. And that is not a place to be. But if you are expecting that maybe there is going to be a market crash. Maybe there is going to be a credit crunch. Maybe there is going to be a legacy equity collapse because of the lack of new money printing. You know, this is actually interesting that Bitcoin has been in roughly, like, just in really, you know, really large surface waves, essentially, on the ocean for the last seven-ish months or whatever, but basically going sideways, essentially, since the Fed started to heavily taper. They started to print less money. So if we want to account for that possibility, or for, you know, the potential of larger red candles and continued downtrend for a short while until the Fed actually reverses course, because I guess I hadn't even mentioned this, even though obviously this was in Arthur Hayes's article as well as Bhatia's explaining it, is that the Fed has essentially stopped tapering completely. Excuse me. They have tapered to the point that they have stopped printing money. They're not buying assets, they're not buying equities anymore, and they intend to taper further in the sense that maybe they're actually going to sell off assets. I don't know. Probably not. That would probably be a disaster. But they're trying to raise rates. They're trying to... Inflation is the issue. And this is something that Hayes's article really stresses a lot, is that we're going into the elections, and so all of their tunes have to change, because now we're concerned for the people. Now we may all, this unexpected, apparently not transitory inflation is now something that the government is going to come in and fix. We have to address it because it's the big evil, big turkey industry and evil house industry and evil lettuce and meat industry. These are the guys that are causing this horrible inflation, and we need to do something about it. We are going to crack down on this. And so the political pressure is for the Fed to begin to taper, to begin to raise rates and have some pretend semblance of a real economy somewhere. It won't work. And Arthur Hayes freely admits this, and Nick Bhatia obviously knows this. It's going to be a disaster. But that's actually what they're counting on, because essentially, everybody's mad because of inflation, obviously, and because of all the shortages. So they're going to look like they're trying to do something about it. It's going to cause an utter just disaster in the stock market, which can't happen because that's everybody's, A, that's now the metric by which everybody measures whether or not they're a successful political regime. And everybody and their mother and their cousin and their children are all so deeply tied to the U.S. equities markets that if it actually collapses, if it falls 20 or 30%, the whole world is screwed. There's going to be a set of dominoes that just eviscerates so much wealth, it's going to be astounding. So what are they going to do? They're going to come in and save the day again. They're going to print trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars. So the question is, if there is a big fat red candle that paints a big giant ass wick down and comes back up when the Fed starts printing money again, are you going to have dry powder to pick it up? Are you going to be leveraged and get liquidated in a long position that in 3 days is actually viable again, but one candle knocks you out in the middle of the night, maybe, or in the middle of the day when you're away from it and can't actually do anything about it, and you lose a significant stack, you miss the bottom, and then the bull market continues, the bull run resumes, and now you're way less, you have way less Bitcoin on your hands. That is always a possibility. Like I said earlier, Bitcoin loves to screw with people's expectations. If you think it's going to go to 100,000 and everybody else thinks it's going to go to 100,000, it's going to get cut in half. For why? I don't know. It doesn't matter. Bitcoin's just going to punish you for expecting it to do something for you. Happens all the time. You ever heard the lesson that as soon as you buy it, when it's on an uptrend, that's how you know it's going to go down the next day because you bought it? Yeah, that happens. That's Bitcoin. Welcome to the show, bitches. This is why you just stack. This is why you DCA. Because Bitcoin loves punching people in the nuts. And if you just DCA, if you're just stacking, you just get to enjoy it. You just get to watch it. And if you get a big fat red candle and you happen to have a little bit of dry powder, buy more of it. I always have a little bit just in case. My income comes in and I just kind of spread it out over the month. And if we're in a downtrend, Man, I just wait for the big red candles and I just stack. I'd smash buy on some Swan Bitcoin. I'll even use Cash App or Strike from time to time, even though Cash App has much higher fees. But I'll still use them if it's the quickest thing to get to and I see an opportunity. Yeah, hell yeah, I'm going to stack, man. But there's also another caveat. You know, back in 2000, in regards to the fact that the Fed has tapered and therefore it's going to be an equities crash, it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be. The stock market doesn't have to crash here. It could be the treasury markets. It could be the bond market that collapses, the repo market. And if that happens, the printing resumes without anything happening in the stock market necessarily. It's like back in 2019. So just before the pandemic started, the treasury markets just, and this is something that Arthur Hayes actually says in his article, is that the treasury markets are so opaque, like we really don't know what the hell is going on over there. So it could break at any moment and we just don't know. So it's a wild card essentially in the other direction. And if that happens, if the treasury market, you know, goes into a tailspin, well then Fed's going to be buying bonds like crazy. They're going to be dumping hundreds of billions, trillions of dollars even into the market in the overnight repo. And that money's slowly going to flow back in and everybody's going to get scared. All the major institutional investors are going to be like, shit, this is happening again. We're going to have so much continued inflation, and they're going to risk off. They're going to buy Bitcoin, and Bitcoin is going to look doubly as useful because the dollar is just going to shit. But no matter what you do, Bitcoin is the place to be holding substantial amounts of wealth, at least in my opinion, for a handful of reasons. It's not just that it's a great thing to funnel funds into in the case of a, you know, huge capitulation candle and you've got some extra dollars or some other asset that you can sell. But that, you know, as soon as the Fed starts printing more money, whether it be for a treasury market collapse or a equities market collapse, then the bull market is going to resume in full force. And as both the articles in question here say, that's an inevitability. That's 100% inevitable. And they're absolutely right. There is no way out of this thing. The only course of action for the Fed is printing money. And it's going to print either because the legacy market collapses, the treasury market collapses, or the November elections come around. Because they only have to look like they give a shit up until November. Then the elections will happen, and then they will just go right back to printing money. That is all this is just a political facade. But the markets must have bukus of money printing, or they will collapse under the weight of all of the debt that we have created. So no matter what, the long term, just in the context, and this is kind of something like Nick Bhatia talks about at the end of it, like how he ends it is that, oh, well, looking at the Fed or whatever, there's still reason to be long Bitcoin. And I'm just like, Jesus, there's a billion reason to be long Bitcoin. But obviously, just because of the Fed, there's the reason to be long Bitcoin. But you should always be long Bitcoin. The network is growing. This is open source money. This is actually sound money restored. Who gives a shit what happens in the long term? If the current is moving in one direction, ignore the waves. Like, shore up your boat so that you don't have to care about the waves. Ride the current. And keep that shit on your BitBox. Or your whatever hardware wallet. Cold card or Ledger Trezor. You know, whatever your fancy is. Just hold it. Make sure it's not on a damn exchange. But that's the other reason that I was actually meaning to get to. About why Bitcoin is such a profound hedge in this sort of an environment. Is that it's an infrastructure hedge. It's not just a money printing hedge. It's not just an equities risk. You know, it's not just a risk asset that you can that works better than gold, but it's actually an infrastructure hedge. If the banking system shuts down, if the networks shut down, if SWIFT has to pause things because there's such a freaking panic that they don't even know what to do and they can't let people move money, Bitcoin doesn't stop working. You don't lose access to your money. You can't get frozen out of your account And these are the crazy ass times when exactly that sort of stuff happens. When hundreds of billions of dollars just vanish into thin air. When trillions of dollars gets locked out, or governments confiscate everybody's retirement account because they have to save it from the evil inflationists. I mean, I genuinely kind of think that the only way, because of the severity of how deeply connected we are to the equities market, everybody's wealth is, and the housing market to boot, like the fact that if there's no more debt, the housing market is in shambles. Like, there's no real market for any of this stuff. It's really fucking scary. I think that the likelihood that the government even attempts to nationalize retirements, I don't even know what that looks like. I guess it's potentially retirements and maybe IRAs, but how do you, like, God, I don't know. What, do they nationalize BlackRock? I don't know. I just don't know. But historically, this is essentially what happens. The government just swoops in and suddenly just owns all of these things, because that's the only way the government can quote unquote save it, by just making it into another government program that was never sustainable from the beginning and was mathematically stupid. But because they just put it in their coffers and they just dictate prices and they just print money into thin air, they can actually control it, because now there's no market forces at work. It's just government putting numbers on things. Of course, that doesn't save the value. Of course, that doesn't save retirements. It's just admitting defeat and letting the dollar take the fall. So I don't know what unfolds here. I only think that the Federal Reserve minutes, like, that their policy is part of the story of Bitcoin. I'm not so certain that Bitcoin relies on the Fed's decision-making to be in a bull market or bear market, but I do think these short-term waves are massively affected by its use as a risk asset in the legacy markets and by institutions, and thus the waves are highly sensitive to what the Fed does, to what they say, to the interest rates that they charge. But I think the broader bear and bull markets, the currents here, are still network related. They're still the global atmosphere they're the global environment, because we're in the stage of countries adopting Bitcoin. This isn't just a US story now, and Bitcoin is essentially going to mature out of being reliant on a single country's monetary policy. Right now, however, it's still just the wealth is so predominantly from the United States market, and the United States still retains so much dominance over the global monetary environment that I think it'll still be a few years before Bitcoin starts to show itself to be a truly global asset. A truly global independent asset, in the sense that it will have its own major market pressures, I guess is the term, or the way to think of it, that it will start to affect other markets, and then so many countries will start, I think, to lean on it to make it an avenue, or, you know, put it on their balance sheets, whatever it is, that Bitcoin essentially becomes a part of their liquidity and their monetary environment, that their reliance on the dollar slowly starts to wane. And when we're looking at 9%, 10% inflation in the CPI numbers, in the fake numbers that are cut down as much as they possibly can, and with as many lies about the statistics relevant to it as possible, when that's the kind of stuff we're talking about, people are going to try to get the fuck out of it. Countries are going to try to get out from underneath the dollar. Major institutions, central banks are going to try to dump their dollars. I mean, they're already dumping bonds. I mean, the Federal Reserve is the buyer of bonds, has been for some time. We're in a crazy environment. We are in an absolutely crazy environment. And as Bitcoin continues to prove itself as a risk asset, capitulation candles included, You know, Bill Miller, a multi-billionaire asset manager, was just talking about it the other day, that he has 50% of his net worth in Bitcoin or Bitcoin related investments, like in the sense that he like bought MicroStrategy or like a mining stock or something like that. But he is hedged to Bitcoin, and he explicitly said if it falls another 30 or 40%, he will double down. He will put even more, maybe even all of his net worth into Bitcoin. More people are going to see it that way. More people are going to realize in his environment and in his peer group, I guess you could say, how powerful of a risk asset this is, and the fact that it has a market and it has a reach that is extended beyond that. They're going to see the current and realize that there's a real market there when equities are all waves right now. It's all debt, and it's all a response to the Federal Reserve. And I don't think we are very far away from a subset of people realizing this to such a degree that the market dynamics really start to change. Bitcoin is big enough for people to realize how important it is. And like I've said many times in the show, many times on the show in the past, we are entering the stage where Bitcoin is the elephant in the room of every central bank board meeting. That the results of their attempted monetary policy are not what they actually are, or not what they hope them to be, because there is no longer the market they thought it was. There's an exit. There's a pressure release valve that comes in the form of a decentralized, global, independent digital currency that they can't touch, that they cannot manipulate, that they cannot dictate the policy of one bit. And that is really going to change things, especially as inflation becomes the number one issue in the voters' minds, in the citizens' minds of countries all over the world, in the political meetings of countries that hold vast amounts of U.S. debt, and certainly in the minds of the leaders and the financial authorities of the 37 dollarized countries around the world. 2022 is going to be a crazy year. I hope you're ready in case there is a capitulation candle. I hope you have a little bit of dry powder to buy. I hope you are not trading. I hope you are not on enormous amounts of leverage so that you can get liquidated. I hope you realize that that is a possibility, even though I don't really think it's going to happen. And I certainly don't think the Fed can make this stretch until November without any sort of a disaster if they actually think they're going to raise rates. Not going to happen. There's no real market for them to pull that off with. But at the end of the day, this is why you stack, you hold your own keys, you get your shit off of exchanges, you get out of the banking system for as much as you can, you hedge where you can, and you stack sats like a crazy son of a bitch. I will have the link to Nick Bhatia's article, as well as Arthur Hayes' article, Maelstrom, if you want to dig into that. There's actually some other things to unpack that I didn't really go into. Some of the notes for, so it's definitely worth a read if you want to kind of dig a little bit more into this. All that available in the show notes. A huge thank you to Fold, to Bitbox, to the Bitcoin 2022 conference and Bitcoin Magazine specifically, and of course Swan Bitcoin for being both my favorite services and products in this space, and for also loving Bitcoin Audible for supporting the show and wanting to be a part of this. It's awesome to have the support of such great teams in this space. Bitcoiners for the freaking win. Don't forget all the discounts and goodies that they've got for the Audionauts. All of that in the show notes. And we will be back here tomorrow. Thank you guys so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe. I am Guy Swan. And until next time, everybody, take it easy. You have been listening to Bitcoin Audible, a 111 production.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.